Welcome to MedTech Science to Society, the podcast that explores the intersection of science and society. This podcast series is brought to you by UCT MedTech in collaboration with the UCT Biomedical Engineering Research Center, where cutting-edge medical technology meets compassionate healthcare. Join us as we dive deep into the latest breakthroughs and innovations and how they're shaping the world we live in. Thanks for clicking play.
Hi, and welcome to today's episode of Global Voices in MedTech, a segment of UCT MedTech's Science to Society series. In this episode, we have the pleasure of chatting with Niklas Dräger, the founder of Cederberg, an international healthcare company headquartered in Switzerland. Nick studied chemical engineering at the University of Natal in South Africa and then pursued a PhD in biochemical engineering at Cambridge in the UK and an MBA at Warwick Business School while working in Roche, Switzerland. His professional business pursuits are a list of plenty, and I'll get him to delve into those rather. So tune in as we look deeper into the world of biomedical engineering across borders. Hi, Nick. Thank you so much for joining us and welcome back to South Africa for your yearly stint under the sun.
Thank you very much. It's always lovely to be here.
We're going to wind back the clock entirely to what inspired your pursuit, or what inspired you rather to pursue a career in engineering right at the beginning. Was it something that dawned on you, or was it something within your family, or did you just look and go, well, this is it?
Yeah, I mean, I always loved math, science, physics. I mean, I also liked English and history and all that sort of stuff, but the math, science, physics was always my favorite subjects. My father and I were the engineers and the scientist side, so it was really, I just felt comfortable with engineering. It's a lovely industry to be in. And yeah, it's fascinating what one can do in the engineering space. And then I got into chemical engineering, which was, it also matched all my love of chemistry and physics with the nuts and bolts of engineering, which was just doubly fascinating.
Your educational path, can you quickly take me through that?
Well, I went to DPHS, the Durban Preparatory High School in Durban. Then I went to DHS, Durban High School. Then I got a bunch of scholarships to go to UND, as it was then, now it's UKZN, in Durban again. So I basically stayed in Durban. My mum was a very good cook, and so it was lovely being able to commute from home to a school or uni and come home for home-cooked meals, which is why I'm on the more rotund side of things, because my mom was way too good a cook. But yeah, and then UND, and then graduated from UND with BSc in Chem Eng, and then I was awarded a scholarship to go to the University of Cambridge, the Right Cambridge, as I call it, and did my PhD in biochemical engineering at Cambridge University. Absolutely mind-blowing time. I mean, Cambridge is just an extraordinary place. I mean, the intellectual capacity in Cambridge is absolutely extraordinary. And the ability to learn and study and do your, really expand yourself is just amazing. And then, yeah, and then got invited by Roche Pharmaceuticals to come to Switzerland to continue my research there. Moved from research into global M&A, so mergers acquisitions at Roche, and at the same time did an MBA through Warwick Business School in the UK. So that's really the educational process. So I've had a wonderful career to date of excitement, interest. You know, it hasn't been your typical career, but it's been a great one. I've enjoyed it.
If you had to summarize the niche aspects of biomedical engineering that you're involved in, how would you go about doing that?
I'm very focused on, well, A, on the diagnostic side. So really developing, creating appropriate diagnostics and diagnostic systems for diseases and medical conditions around the world. And I think this feeds, this is why I like what Sudesh is doing so much, because he always uses this terminology, fit for purpose or appropriate, that sort of idea, because there's too much focus on, at least in the Western Hemisphere, you know, Europe, US, of developing extremely fancy pieces of kit, but they're not really appropriate for, you know, the African context or whatever. That's not to say we want to have cheap and nasty technologies in Africa. We want to leapfrog, but we need to make sure it's appropriate. So the people here, the experts here and the actual, the operators can actually manage this stuff and get the most out of it, most bang for your buck, as everybody crudely puts it. And then it's, so diagnostics, but then it's also focusing on medical technologies that are, again, appropriate for the local, regional, local, national, regional situations, the environments. Therefore, they need to be robust. They need to be relatively simple, but accurate. Simple to operate, but very accurate in their data output. Just appropriate, fit-for-purpose technologies. And there's far too much focus, as I say, on developing something that you can charge the earth for, but it actually doesn't work outside of a super high-tech lab in the US or in parts of Europe, not all parts of Europe, but certain parts of Europe.
Yeah, definitely. So Suresh speaks a lot about your involvement in the COVID-19 National Ventilator Project and how it influenced your approach to the healthcare industry at the time. Could you share your experiences during that?
No, that was a superb experience because, you know, I got one of my very good friends is Tumi Sumeta. She's the CEO of SAHPRA. And I, you know, I've done quite a bit of work on innovation in the biotech healthcare space in South Africa, various programs partly sponsored by another good friend of mine, Professor Dennis Liotta out of Emory University in the US, who loves Africa, loves South Africa, has invested a lot of money over the years in trying to spark innovation, entrepreneurship in Africa, particularly in South Africa. So through that, I really became very involved in giving back to South Africa, particularly, but also sub-Saharan Africa, bringing my experience and my knowledge base into Africa. Now, when COVID hit, I don't know how I got connected onto the first big conference call. I think there were about 250 people on the call. And I thought, well, you know, because at the time there was all this crying out for ventilator technology that could be actually produced cheaply in South Africa. And, you know, a lot of people were focusing on trying to get technology out of the UK or, you know, of course, China, India, and so on, who weren't giving up their technologies without a fight or cheaply. And I thought, well, I can come in and try and help. You know, it was, in hindsight, spectacularly arrogant. But anyway, I thought I could bring some of my experience and connections to bear. And on this conference call, I realized that South Africa has a massive capacity of highly intelligent individuals in this space who we had the capacity to make a lot of these technologies anyway. And one of the guys on the call was an acquaintance, Martin Zanner, who was at CSIR at the time. I think he's now at Mandela University and a hell of a bright guy. And he on the call said, I'm praising it badly, but everybody's saying, we've got to go to China to get PPE and all this sort of stuff. And I said no, we've got actually all the capacities to produce 99% of the PPE in South Africa already. Here's a list of people to talk to and companies to approach. And most of the people on the call, we have the capacity in South Africa? Yes, we do. You just need to know who to contact. And he basically gave the list. And, you know, that was a massive eye-opener for me. I mean, it sort of burst my little arrogance bubble quite a lot because it just showed there was this intellectual capacity just intellectual capacity and industrial capacity to do this. It's just that no one was connecting up the dots. And I think this is where, you know, and then we went on to, you know, these various groups went on to produce these wonderful little BiPAP machines, CPAP machines with AmbuBags, simple technology, but they worked. And actually, some of the expert physicians on the call were saying, no, we don't want patients to get into the ICU because practically once the patient's in the ICU, they're dead. We want to keep them away from that. So we want to treat them ahead of that and keep them the hell away from the ICUs. There was a trick in the ICUs that there was apparently we didn't have the capacity to produce a lot of these, the oxygen piping and all that sort of stuff. So there was a bit of limitation there. Anyway, so I learned a hell of a lot of that. And it also reinforced my idea that we needed appropriate medical device technologies for South Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, and that we could do it ourselves here with the right type of industrial support and financial support, and then connecting up the dots. And I think this is one of the amazing things that Suresh has been able to achieve with his department is he's connecting the dots. And therefore, all these projects are now whizzing out of his lab and out of his department because he's one of the guys who's really connected up the dots. And now he's reconnected to Martin, and Martin's now down at Mandela University and is also now, you know, supporting this sort of drive. So I think it's very exciting times, I have to say.
Yes. And that's where my next point is, especially in academia, we struggle with moving ideas outside of the classroom into industry. And this sounds like, especially, and exactly what you're speaking to is that urgency for collaboration. Can you speak a little bit more to that?
Yes. Well, I mean, this is another thing that I've been very focused on over the last years is, you know, I'm an entrepreneur in residence. It's a very grandiose title. I'm an honorary fellow in entrepreneurial innovation, or whatever it is, Lancaster University. It's a very highfalutin title, but it's very important because, so I do that at Lancaster University in the UK, at Emory in the US, and I'm on the Vice Chancellor's Advisory Council. I've forgotten the exact term, but at Wits University. It is really you know, Emory is a very good university, but it's, one could say it's a second tier university after the Stanfords and the Harvard and the Purdue's and all that sort of stuff. Princeton's in the US. And Lancaster is a university, but it used to be a polytechnic in the UK. Then it got converted to a university. So it's also a second level university behind the Cambridges and the Oxfords and the Durhams and the St. Andrews. And these universities are actually very, very innovative and looking for global collaborations. They're working very hard in global collaborations because they know they don't have the name association of a Cambridge and Oxford or Harvard and Stanford. They've got to work harder at making the international links. So I'm very involved in trying to do that and linking up the likes of Lancaster to Emory to potentially Cambridge down to Wits, UCT and so on. So getting this global collaboration going, because I think the likes of Cambridge can learn a hell of a lot from what the likes of Sudesh are doing at UCT. And certainly what a lovely old acquaintance of mine up at Wits before he died of cancer, I think it was last year, Professor Barry Dorlatsky, brilliant human being and a brilliant soul. And sadly passed away of cancer. But what their vision was, you know, the super innovations that are going on in these universities really get them to internationalize, but they're going to have to work hard. So that's what I'm focused on, is trying to get these connections going to internationalize the innovations that are being created in South Africa and sub-Saharan Africa for that matter, and then therefore gain access to the right type of financial support, because we just don't have the financial wherewithal in South Africa to fund all of this stuff. And I think there's also, well, it's not me, but it's a general case that we are very risk averse. The sources of large financing in South Africa are very risk averse, and they don't understand the sector. And Australia, where we did a lot of investing in my previous life with my wife's asset management company, suffer from the same issues with their biotech sector, that most of the big sources of financing were mining companies or mining billionaires, and they didn't know a thing about the biotech sector. But they had shed loads of money. So it created a huge problem in the financing of biotech, where you got a lot of little mom and pop investors, but they didn't understand much about the biotech. So you really had a huge problem in getting the big financing to really internationalize the research. And Australia, you know, it creates a huge amount of innovation and entrepreneurship. So that's really where I'm coming from.
The importance of that. Obviously, you, as you've mentioned, run several entities involved in several universities, et cetera, et cetera. And as South Africans, we also like to know that it's not always greeny on the other side. Yes. What are the challenges that you face managing pharmaceutical-related businesses in?
Yes, it is not always green. The grass is not always green on the other side of the fence. Switzerland is a high, you know, regularly rated one of the top three most innovative countries in the world. We have obviously a limited financial resource. I mean, we've got a lot of billionaires, luckily, up until very recently, a lot of them have come from the healthcare industry, so they understand what the hell they're investing in, which is a huge plus. But a lot of these guys are getting old now, and they're becoming very risk averse, because when you're into your 80s, you don't want to be putting money behind a little startup biotech and potentially lose it. So yeah, they're becoming more risk averse. So actually, some of that money is starting to dry up. We also shot ourselves in the feet, well, at least the Swiss government did, by giving the two fingers or the big finger to the EU. They've been in negotiations with the EU for about 10 years on a global agreement, trade agreement, because Switzerland's not part of the EU, but we sort of part of the EU. We aligned, but really to free up the trade even more. And then the Swiss government turned around and said, "Niet." That immediately EU finance for healthcare, young healthcare companies dried up, as it did with Britain when they Brexited. And so both Britain and Switzerland would be sort of struggling to get back into to access financing, which is really stupid. And I'm involved, I'm an expert at InnoSuisse, which is this development agency, which funds and supports startup companies in the healthcare, nutrition and IT and everything space. And suddenly, you know, they had to find more money to support innovation entrepreneurship in Switzerland. Now they've done a deal with, they've done made an agreement with the UK to collaborate a little bit more in that space and so on. But they also have been trying very hard to get back in and access the EU money, which they sort of quasi done now. But it's becoming more difficult. You know, the European money is much more diverse and risk averse than, say, in the US, certainly than in the US. I mean, you don't have the massive, sort of rather opaque sources of financing that you get in China. And you don't have one huge market as you have in the US or China or India, for that matter. The EU is still extremely diverse. And if you're a French VC, you tend to invest more in French companies. And if you're Italian, you invest in Italian companies and vice versa. Whereas in the US, you have an investor in San Francisco will invest in a Boston company. Doesn't matter. It's the US, and the same thing with China and India, for that matter. So it's not always greener in Europe. It's more difficult to get hold of financing. It's very much more risk averse. So if you fail, then you're an idiot. Whereas in the US, you fail, well, at least you tried. Try again. You know, we'll put some money behind you, back you again. If you keep failing, then maybe you are an idiot. But we'll try and back you two or three times. In Europe, you fail once, put money behind him or her because they're idiots. That's still a problem, psychological issue. Yeah, so it's not always easy, but there's obviously a lot more money. There are dollar billionaires floating around in Switzerland and Holland and France and the UK and so on. Italy is a real problem, though, with startup funding. Very, very problematical because that you even get particular states in Italy will have certain government financing, and you have to set up your company in that Italian state, and then you'll get some little bits of money. But it's a real pain. Yeah.
Yeah. You obviously have worked with startups from both South Africa and in Switzerland. What are those comparisons that you can draw between the two? Obviously, both bring perks and pros and cons to the fore. Yeah. But how did they
compare? I mean, obviously, Switzerland, if you're looking at healthcare, Switzerland's obviously had a much longer history of big pharmaceutical companies, well, healthcare success, a healthcare commercial success. So you've got, again, a lot of these ex-big pharma, big medical device company execs who are floating around with their experience, international experience, and money. So there's a lot more support in Switzerland for healthcare startups across the board. There's a lot more knowledge for healthcare startups. There's also, you know, the Swiss healthcare system is very well structured. It's becoming less supportive of the industry now. They're constantly putting pressure on pricing and that, which is a pain as well. But it's a very well-structured market with a very good reimbursement and health insurance system. A lot of it's private pay, obviously. So when you compare that to South Africa with, you know, I'm going to be very biased here, but I would say until Tumi became CEO of SAHPRA, it was slightly dysfunctional. I think Tumi has done an absolutely outstanding job in wrenching SAHPRA around and getting it functioning. And you know, what she did through COVID was amazing. So, but then I'm very biased. I think the world of Tumi. But so there's a much better structure at the top. At the health insurance, the private insurance like Discovery and so on do a very good job. But then you've got the rest of the population that aren't insured or insured state insurance, and that's a mess. So there's a lot to be done there. And then it doesn't have the history of, you know, of healthcare companies. I mean, you've got Aspen Pharmacare. Yes, you know, what Stephen and Gus and Stavros have done with Aspen Pharmacare is absolutely incredible. Hence, these Stephens are dollar billionaire and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's amazing what they've done. But it's one company. There was Adcock Ingram, but that's sort of muddling along. You've got MedPro, what was it? Okay, but it's really Aspen Pharmacare. Whereas in Switzerland, you've got n number of medical device companies, tons of pharma companies. You've got pharmaceutical production, biotech production. You really don't have a lot of that here. We used to be very good at producing vaccines, as Tumi keeps reminding me, in South Africa, and then we lost the plot. So now we try to pick that up. But that should be an absolute focus for South Africa, is to produce vaccines. We should not be having to rely on India for vaccines, or Europe, US for vaccines. We can produce diagnostics down here. We should be doing a lot more of that. But it needs support. It needs that industrial support. It needs actually execs here, like the Stevens, like the Gusses, and so on, to bring their experience and know-how of building big companies in the healthcare space, being successful, to put that experience to work in the industry with the young entrepreneurs and so on, to help them build. Otherwise, we're not going to get that well-structured industry that can actually compete to some extent. I mean, we're never going to be fully able to compete with US, India, China, and so on a global basis. But at least in specific areas, we should be able to compete very well. But we've got to get away from this idea that, you know, South Africa is all important. We are a lovely, lovely country, but we are at the bottom end of Africa. You know, geographically, we have a slight deficit. So we've got to actually do something about that and get active in innovation and entrepreneurship, and then scream and shout about it. But we've actually got to create it first.
And on that note, what are you currently busy with? What on the spectrum of your 9 to 5, what are you currently focusing on?
Well, I'm working on various projects. One, I just gotten off the call with them. It's a team linked through, they're actually UK, but they linked through Israel to Malawi, of all places, in the healthcare space. I'm an advisor to a very good little VC, but it's a little VC in Cape Town called One Bio, Nick Walker, another Nick, and Giancarlo, very bright guys, but they have, you know, they're very dynamic, but they have, you know, by comparison with the VCs even in Switzerland, they're tiny. They need more. That sort of team of very intelligent guys needs a bit more financial support, financial backing, you know. And then obviously in constant discussion with Sudesh and how to get involved more with what he's doing. Constantly talking to another really good friend of mine, Professor Raj Ramasar, the head of human genetics at UCT, who's phenomenal intellect, absolutely phenomenal intellect. I had a good friend of mine down here from UKZN. He was a professor of agriculture at UKZN in the Peter Maritzburg branch, Professor Mark Lang, another walking encyclopedia, absolutely astounding a human being, and a lovely human being as well. So discussing various projects with him. I'm working on a project. I'm officially chief strategy officer. Don't get paid for it. That's not a problem. For a wonderful project in Ghana. It's called the ICCRC. It's the International Center for Childhood, International Childhood Cancer Research Center, Research and Treatment Center. It's a project that's been started and pushed by another astounding human being out of Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York, Dr. Tanya Trippett, who is an extraordinary pediatric hemoncologist, intellect, university sized intellect. I mean, we are working on setting up a big center for childhood cancer research and treatment in Ghana. That'll be a non-profit ultimately. Yeah. And then they're working on advising Lancaster on healthcare and medical devices and so on. And then with InnoSuisse, what I'm trying to do with InnoSuisse, discussing with the guys out here, is how can we set up projects in Switzerland that could then be supported and financed through the InnoSuisse channel? Because that would be very nice to do, and all those sort of things. Yeah.
Have you managed to biomedically engineer more hours into your day? Because it really sounds.
No, look, it's fascinating, and it's lovely to be. What excites me and why I get up in the morning is being able to speak to. And again, it sounds biased. I'm probably blowing sunshine up his derriere, but you know, being able to speak to people like Sudesh and Mark, and sadly until recently, people like Barry and Raj, people who are just. They are so focused on doing what is good in the healthcare space. Yes, making some money at the end of the day would be good, but it's developing, utilizing the intellectual capacity that we have in this country and building upon that in an appropriate way that generates, can create an industry of innovators. And as I think, that's what Mark said the other day, is that we've got to find a structure underneath the government in this country that tends to squash innovation. They claim they want to support innovation, but they tend to squash it to create a mechanism whereby we can encourage entrepreneurs and innovators to stay in South Africa and not to hive off to Europe and the US, but stay here and build on the skill sets we've got here. It is difficult. It's not going to happen overnight. And it will start with little green shoots, as they keep saying. But if we don't start somewhere, we may as well start anywhere, basically.
Definitely. Lastly, at UCT MedTech, we often have, obviously, students who then go on to create spin-off startup companies like you've worked with in the past. What advice do you have for those starting up in those small companies, looking to make that difference, but, you know, coming across the challenges?
Yes, we could talk about this for weeks. The first thing is not to be scared, try, and to believe in your innovation and your project, because there are people like the Sudeshes and the Marks and the Rajas who would support that. And a lot of them are well connected. Those sort of people are very well connected. So not to be scared to try. Yes, there are massive risks involved. So you've got to have a strong stomach and strong nerves. And if you have a nervous disposition, maybe ask somebody else to start your innovation or your innovative company for you, because you do need a strong stomach and nerves, and you need to don't oversell the idea, but also don't over-innovate the idea. You know, this comes back to what Sudesh and Mark say a lot is, again, appropriate technology. We don't have to reinvent the wheel to create a very good, appropriate technology that is still very innovative, but it's not, you know, all beeps and whistles and lights and so on, but it's appropriate, innovative for the context. And it could actually end up being very innovative for the rest of the globe because it's appropriate for this context. So strong nerves, make sure you've got good support, family support, good technical support behind you. Don't overpromise and underdeliver, but don't try to over innovate, and try to focus on technologies that actually are appropriate for here, rather than trying to say, well, you know, we can develop the next and greatest cancer antibody therapy, because sure as hell, somebody in Europe or the US has got shedloads more money to invest in that and will probably beat you to it. That's not to say you shouldn't even bother, but just be careful, you know, and then think about, you know, the key to innovation is, you see something that doesn't work in your context and you think, I can create something to solve that problem. Mm-hmm. Don't think of, well, what could solve a problem in America, because there's somebody already doing that. But think of what can solve a problem here, and you can still be very successful. You know, it's the one of my old, and I'm making a horrible bastardization of the example, but when Mo Ibrahim started Arescom, I'm going to bring cell phones into Africa. And everybody said, well, you're nuts. They don't even have landlines. And he said, that's the whole point. You know, they don't have landlines. I'll bring cell phones, you know. And now he's, you know, extremely wealthy individual, because he wasn't that he reinvented the cell phone or invented the cell phone. He just found a very innovative way of bringing it to a market that no one had thought of before. And a simple version of the cell phone, not the smartphone with all the beeps and whistles on it, but a simple cell phone. And yep, there goes history. So it's that sort of idea.
Nick, well, thank you so, so much. And thank you for investing your time and effort into South Africa. It's always refreshing to know that we've got great minds like yourself still putting time and effort in. So really,
I've got a great mind, but you know, I love South Africa with a passion. I get stressed all the time when certain people do stupid things in the country. Mm-hmm. But by and large, it's a beautiful country. It's lovely people. We just need to start I think that's also the thing for entrepreneurs, innovators: believe in yourself. Don't become arrogant and pompous, but believe in what you're doing. Because otherwise, if you don't believe in it, no one else is going to do it.
And with that, we come to the end of another insightful episode of Science to Society. We'd like to extend our sincere gratitude to our guest, Nicholas Draeger, for sharing his expertise and shedding light on some fascinating topics. We hope that you, our listeners, found this discussion informative and thought-provoking. Join us next time as we continue to explore the intersection of science and society. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to MedTech Science to Society, the podcast that explains the convergence of science and society with biomedical engineering. We hope that you enjoyed this episode, brought to you by UCT MedTech in collaboration with the UCT Biomedical Engineering Research Center, where advanced medical technology merges with compassionate healthcare. Stay up to date with the latest innovations, discoveries, and advancements, and how they impact the world around us. Find UCT MedTech on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram to stay up to date. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for clicking play.